everybody. Welcome to Kush and Kai. I'm Kai.
I'm Kush. What's good, y'all?
Oh, you pretty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, we love you. And in chitty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, what will
do? Oh my god!
Here,
oh my god!
Motor car.
What's going
on?
Hanky, what's going on? The server's crashing! The server's crashing! Buzzsprout says the server's crashing! Why are there red lights?
Bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang!
Steam pipes are bursting! Where do we get steam pipes from?
Bang bang, our 5-4 Fender friend! 5-4 Fender! Chitty chitty! Chitty chitty bang bang!
Kai, are you okay?
Yes, I'm good. I'm good, I'm sorry. We watched Terminator. No, we watched Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And I was so happy to inflict this upon my friend that did not have to repeatedly see this.
GS just reported that a 5.2 earthquake occurred in California from all the panties dropping because the original DVD is on this episode. Dick Van Dyke. We're talking Chitty Squared, Bang Squared. Chitty chitty bang bang. This was your hell to unleash upon us. Why did you do this to us?
Oh my god. Listen, I have a love for my wife has introduced or reminded me actually that I love musicals because I grew up without musicals and understanding that I loved them. Some of my favorite movies, two of them in there include Labyrinth and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and a few others, but I didn't grow up going to see any of your Les Mis's or your Miss Saigon's or Phantom of the Opera, any of the Cats, any of the, I was like, no, that's not a me or whatever thing. But my wife, who is a Broadway producer, just found this thing in me that was like, Kai, no, you love these things. Like this isn't a transient thing. Like, these are baked into you. And I was like, oh, you're right. And this is one of the movies that, okay, there is a, I have to recreate this at some point because it keeps coming up. Like, this is like a childhood trauma type of thing where it's like, no, I remember like that was inflicted upon me over and over. Like, I didn't understand. And what that was is, you guys understand this, where it's, I had a set of VHS tapes that was in the living room that was like, yeah, on a weekend or whatever, you could plop, or a weeknight, you could plop it in to the player, and it was happening.
And this was one of them?
Yeah, it wouldn't. The thing was, my dad was tricky with the VHS thing, so he would record stuff off of TV or from other sources. He was like, he would,
yours too,
daisy,
huh?
He would daisy chain together two VCRs to record from like a rental or something. Just another VHS, and I swear, Willow, Star Wars off TV, some of the old, like, Flight of the Navigator, there is an era of films that happened, but this one fucking snuck its way in there on an EP VHS, guys, extended play, guys.
Wow.
There were lines going across progressively on the TV, like, it was there, but this thing was in rotation.
Just to validate I had,
please.
We as a family had a cabinet of about, you know, 200 VHSs each recorded an EP off the TV.
I had a tenth of what you were talking about.
Each one was, and we had a little book. We had a little catalog
that
was indexed. He cataloged it.
Yeah.
Oh, Mama Hayes did that as well. She had everything cataloged, recorded.
Catalogs?
Time codes.
And, yeah. What are you talking
about? No time
about?
Codes, but like tape number 13, you're going to find Amadeus, Les Mis, and something else.
Well,
like,
mine was a German family. So.
Right.
Oh, okay. My gosh.
Yeah.
And, you know, before we start, I would just like to address the elephant in the room. Quite frankly, the depiction of Germans in this film is offensive and frankly just unacceptable.
It is biased. It is wrong. To continue these stereotypes is
Hitler. What a scamp!
That so I'm glad. Thank you. This was in the cabinet, so to speak, and this was in heavy rotation because I don't know, as a kid, I don't know what drew me to it or whether it was just like, yeah, we watched Labyrinth, Willow, the 100th time. Hmm. So we're just going to kick it over to something else. And yeah, this was in there. Everybody, if you haven't seen this, Ian Fleming wrote this.
This is an Ian Fleming novel. For those of you that don't know. It is produced by the Broccoli family. Or am I saying that right? Are they the Broccoli family?
The Broccoli
family, who does all the James Bond movies.
Mm-hmm.
All 25 of them to date. This is the only non-James Bond movie they ever did.
Mm. And with good reason, there is international intrigue in this film. There is deep. I mean, different nation. 1908. This is pre World War One.
World War One. 118 years from today.
I believe this was setting the stage for the first international world war conflict. I mean, the types of technology that was being stolen, the intrigue involved, like the Baron
obviously based on Archduke Ferdinand.
Obviously. He wasn't awkward, the Germans, awkward. Because Deutschland was represented separately earlier, so he was not. That was a separate entity.
They had a Grand Prix in Deutschland. Yes.
Yeah, the first 7 minutes of this movie is a car race that has nothing to do with anything except for, I guess, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. The car
they
is
needed
in it.
To set up the yeah. They needed to set up Chitty, who is at points seems sentient because its creator is unaware of its own capacity and ability. Which, Heike, maybe I could appeal to you for this, like. You know, when you're designing things, like as an engineer, when you're like, oh, when you say like, oh, I didn't know it could do that. Like, it usually doesn't apply to
it's
facets.
Never good. Let's just say that.
It's never good. But second, it's never like, wow, I didn't know it could become a submarine. You know, like, I didn't know it could go into space. Like, that's not part of the narrative, usually, where it is fucking in. Like, that. Sorry. This movie captures my heart because it just is music and Dick Van Dyke and nonsense.
An hour shorter without the music. It would be an hour and a half shorter without Roald Dahl's edition, which is Bavaria?
Bulgaria.
Bulgaria. Thank you.
Bulgarian. And 1968. This is very specifically targeted as a slight towards Nixon. Hmm. Remember the small-handed Bulgarians? That was a anti-Nixon slogan.
Oh.
Or what have you. I don't exactly remember the thing. I wasn't there during the time. This is my best brother. But Bulgarians, that was the only time that has entered the lexicon, was for Nixon. What have you. Either way, I have to say, the opening in this movie is too long and then disturbing, wherein we see Chitty Chitty is a...
45 minutes of this movie is the prologue.
Mm-hmm.
It is 45 minutes before we actually get to the movie.
Until it takes a weird deep turn. Like, they just plunge that clutch in to see if they can get into reverse. And they do. They do. But the first few minutes, the first, like, 4 minutes of this thing is car races. Fucking Chitty Chitty is dialed in. It can win races. This frame or this engine or whatever it is top. It's winning the tour.
It's the 1908 France Grand Prix,
and then it's in Deutschland, and they're racing around, and it's great. But the moment that, as a kid, I remember and I'll never forget, and then you just saw, is that, like, oh wait, it crashes and burns and kills the occupants inside. They all die.
No, they escape. I saw it on the thing today. It's you gotta go wide, but they jump out.
I just remember thinking to myself that I'm sure somebody. I hope that somebody,
because I could see that happening, like, on the 4x3 format. You're like, oh, those guys got roasted alive. Nope, they escape.
Yeah. But I was hoping that somebody would let that little girl know. Who brought her dog to a Grand Prix.
The worst goddamn parents in the world.
That it's her fault.
It is her fault.
It is her fault. She ended the career of a magical car.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
A sentient magical car was killing it on these races, and now it is relegated to living in a horribly accented person's...
A junkyard before it's a junkyard.
Junkyard. I like, and then we fast forward to the kids that will become central to this.
Who are terrible.
They're playing in Chitty Chitty's.
Jeremy and Jemima.
Burnt and rusted out husk. And the guy, there's a gentleman trying to buy it for scrap, and he's annoyed by the children. And I like that he has to be mean to the children, what he's going to do to the car. He's like, no, I'm going to burn your car because it sucks and it'll be burnt into scrap and be nothing. Like, so just cartoonish villainy all over this thing.
I'm 1,000% with that guy because these kids fucking suck, Kai.
Jeremy and Jemima.
Jeremy and Jemima. They're just I hate these two as children, as human beings. They get called out by Miss Truly Scrumptious later in the film for not going to school, and later it serves them well that maybe these children should be in school because they are dumb, sir. They are dumb.
I think that's bearing the lead. Like, they very legitimately nearly killed her.
Yeah, back then. Yeah. Okay, there's not only is there no seatbelts, but just there's a lot of, like, you know, obtuse angles and just pointy things coming out of the car, and it's not easy to stop. Like, the catgut can't really restrict the wheel fast enough to get it to stop the momentum. All right. That is the next scene where they're walking home from the junkyard where they play during the day. They're going back for, as we find out, tea time, because they're trained for that. So they're walking directly across the street, and they run, a woman who is not interested in murdering any children that day sort of veers off and then is kind of incensed that it's like, hey, what the fuck? Like, shouldn't you be in school or something? They're like, no, they don't care.
Yeah, like, we don't go to that school. That's not a thing we do, and our dads are cool with that.
If you'll allow me, like, in present day, here's how this exchange would have gone. Like, please, just for a moment. She would have picked up the phone, called Child Protective Services, and gone like, hey, I was run off the road, and there's these two kids. Yeah. No, they don't go to school. No, they're dirty, too. They're very dirty. Yeah. Oh, no, I went to the gentleman's home. Yeah, there were explosives at the gentleman's home. Yeah, no, he would have died if I had not showed up. He was combusting at the time. Yeah, of course. He doesn't want them to go to... He has pulled them from school, and they roam about the streets like dirty children. Yes, Caractacus Potts. Yes, like crackpot. Yeah. No, he would have died as well. Yes, I'm pretty sure they should be taken away from the father. Like,
the smell of urine was prominent.
It was pungent and present. Like, there is no way to get around. Like, there's no way around. Like, look, I get maybe you're a brilliant inventor, but he is not a great dad. He's
solely focused on his work. He is introduced by wearing a set of wings with rockets on his back.
And let me note that the wings, when he is stationary, about to take off on this endeavor, the wings are the wind hits them when he's not moving, and then they quiver a lot. I'm like, I don't know how much lift they're going to generate for your mass here.
Yeah.
Is this okay, everybody, this is the first time he must be doing this, right?
This is the first test. He says that.
He's never done this before.
No.
And you would figure, as a scientist, you would want to, like, attach one of the six rockets that he has. And in 1908, that's one of the most valuable, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The material generated and then the charge.
And he mentions
conical.
That his suit is flame retardant, like, it's okay. Fireproof.
But he also noted is he only lights one of the rockets.
Mm-hmm. We don't even see him light the rocket. He's just got his arms extended, and then the rocket bursts.
Everybody, he's on a track, like he's on a skate track that is supposed to, the rockets actually do propel him up the line, and then what? Okay, given that the wings are
superficial,
what is his plan here? Anybody? Let me throw it out there. What's his plan? What does he want to accomplish by this?
I think that question is anathema to everything that we know and continue to learn about him as a person. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait, yeah.
Best case scenario, he just glides off the cliff and lands safely in a valley is his plan.
And the children are put into the care of...
Fantasy. It is...
Children are put into the care of somebody responsible.
Thrust times mass equals fantasy. Mm. That is what we're dealing with in this scenario. And he would... Okay. I will posit that he... This was... probably a suicide attempt. Because, okay, he has spent probably, like, he has no money now. He has a lot of fantastical inventions, but he had to cobble them together from somewhere. He has clearly spent a lot of money on rockets in 1908, which were scarce at best.
Well, he spent all his money because at some point the kids hit him up for cash to buy Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And they're like, it's only $30. And in 1908, that's a lot of quid. However,
and he has rockets at his disposal that he wants to fashion into not a flying machine. This will not fly. The wings, again, are superficial. Maybe these are angel wings that he can rejoin his wife in heaven, or maybe she lives in Brighton now and hates him because he is an absentee father.
I feel like it's just molded plastic.
But that doesn't care about education or fucking anything. He is focused on himself almost in totality here.
Okay.
And he was trying to, trying to kill himself in that first scene. Okay. It is tragic.
Then Ian Fleming is horrible at subtext because this is a much better movie.
Yeah, of course. And then later after Truly mm-hmm. Scrumptious. That's
Truly
her name.
Scrumptious. Yes, that's Roald Dahl's take on Ian Fleming.
He bristles that somebody would question his parenting style, where. Like, maybe he was coming down off, like, The Rush,
mm-hmm.
but it's very easy to question his parenting style. Like, it's not a stretch to say, like, maybe your kids should be in school. Like, I don't know. Like, their peer group would expect that. They're just roaming around, almost getting run over by ingenue, you know, millionaire heiresses. Mm. Like, this is a problem out in the countryside. Yeah, 1908 though, we go into the house. There's some fun inventions in there. There's a vacuum cleaner. Yeah. There's a light box sort of animation thing. Like he's got some ideas, guys. Like he's got some ideas in there.
Yeah, he's got the machines. They're all the Rube Goldberg gimmicks. They're all very fun.
The egg and hot dog machine. Have you ever had eggs and hot dogs for breakfast? Was that your thing?
Not together.
No, that's a British breakfast, though.
Eggs and sausage. And that's
eggs and sausage, thing. Sure.
Eggs and bangers, yeah.
Eggs and bangers.
Definitely a thing I haven't had.
So inside there, we see their life. The kids are subjected to. Dad is only focused on his work. He wants to deal with them mainly through inventions, so he doesn't have to deal with them.
And they have a grandfather who is mentally ill at best. As he continues to show up in costume and announce he's going to such places as India. And then he walks to his outhouse of a room. Mm-hmm. And they're all just like, see you later, Grandpa. Enjoy that
safari.
That
would be on the call to Child Protective Services as well. It's like, yes. Oh, no, it doesn't seem great. No, they don't eat at regular times. Yes, his father... He makes him sleep outside of the house. When it rains on him. He lives in a shed, a gardening shed outside. He makes him live outside.
A tall shed, not a wide shed. So this man sleeps either in a fetal position or standing up.
And this is before we even discovered shell shock. Like it could be a PTSD situation where he was murdering proud Brahmin in India or maybe in Pakistan. I don't know at the time.
I think it's just Alzheimer's.
I think that's you've mispronounced that. It's called actually pronounced "bringing civilization to."
Yes, I'm sorry. I apologize. I missed that one. Yeah. So he's inside the house, and we're seeing all this going on, and he sings the song "You Too." He sings the sweet song about how if he didn't have them, it would be nothing. Like,
these songs, man.
This I know you hate songs. This is why now I may only pick musicals. But he sings the song like "You Too." it's a sweet song. It's wonderful. It's about how he relies on them to children for strength in this time of, we're not sure where mama's went. I assume she's dead, but more likely she has left this. Literally, his name is Caractacus Crackpot. Caractacus Potts. Crackpot. He is left. He has been left by his wife. I'm pretty sure whenever he has thoughts of self-harm, he sings this song to just be like, you too will do it. Like, he wants to be the ultimate single dad because he's driven off the mother. And then for either mental health or money reasons, like, they're stuck with him because he had the, you know, the windmilly whatever house to make it happen. And the next detail is that the children reveal our favorite junkyard car, which is a detail that, I mean, it's so specific to this thing. Like, no, father, what? Like, they didn't want him to fix it up necessarily. It was just like,
they just the car.
They just wanted the car. Yeah. And
they're again, already recognizing it possessively. This is our car. He's selling our car to this man. We need our car. And dad's just like, I don't have the money. He stalls, but he says that eventually.
The mean guy says he settles on 30 bob, which is 30 shillings. And I don't know the relative amount in for
30 bucks.
1908 dollars. But
30 bucks.
A gentleman who is in possession of, like, rocket matter fuel that he has purchased or bartered for somehow in 1908 cannot muster 30 shillings.
I would imagine that Crackpot has invented his own gunpowder for the rocket. He has taken it that level. He is that much of a hippie.
There's a better movie. There's a better movie here where he starts selling weapons to the Baron. That you know, maybe like fantastical weapons to the Baron.
Much like a Doc Brown in Back to the Future.
And then he has to question his own like humanity and like his relationship with the kids is going good. And he starts talking to his ex-wife, but then he realizes like, wow, they're like Xylon B is killing a lot of people and they don't, you know, like they don't know exactly what to do. That would be a better detail other than you've got a lot of metal and mechanical parts and what have you. Like you could do this for the kids. However, Caractacus Potts is the kind of man that takes it upon himself. He is a self-made man in his own right. And so, what does he do? He realizes that one of the... Again, people in 1908, they used to make their own sweets. Did you know that? They made their own hard candy. Hakey, I know you're a Renaissance man. Have you made your own candy?
I've worked a bit with chocolate. I'm not
So, yes,
fan
just that's
of
a yes.
Candy?
That's a yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a yes, ultimately.
Yeah.
So he, in the same right, has molded some a tubular hard candy that produces a sound when blown upon.
Yes.
And it is actually, why was this not a part of my childhood? Did you guys have any Toot Sweets of your own thing?
I remember.
I don't know.
They had, no, I can't remember.
He comes up, he has inadvertently invented, because the unevenness in heat during the production process, holes have formed.
Yeah, well, the sugar has crystallized.
Crystallized.
Indistinctly. So, but I think the reason you don't see candy whistles is that it's actually pretty hard to form sugar, to have it crystallize in a really precise way to create a flue.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a 3D printer out there that's like, fuck you, dude. This is what I do all day, every day.
Well, 110 years later, absolutely there's a 3D printer.
Well, but, yeah, but to do it with sugar, I think.
Yeah, to do that every time in 1908, that's the happy accident.
Okay, a recorder has a basic piece up in the front. I mean,
yeah,
like
a flue.
Well, remember what this man's inventions are. He's invented a video projector
cleaner.
With Wi-Fi.
There's a vacuum cleaner there.
He's invented a vacuum cleaner, as you just said. What else did he get?
I'm going to
with flight.
I'm going to posit a critique of his engineering proficiency and just say that a lot of the things he invented, he introduced a Rube Goldberg-esque quality to them that probably wasn't necessary.
An unnecessary extra step that is death in many design processes. That, yeah, it wouldn't need to be there.
If he were the design engineer at an industrial firm, even in 1908, I would say that he'd be getting a lot of talks from his supervisor.
There'd be a lot of flags like, hey, buddy, like before the big meeting on Monday, like let's just throw back and forth here.
By Peter, because, you know.
Yeah, run it by him. He's the head of that, you know, of the finalized department. Yeah. But at the same time, like, that actually speaks to why this idea is good, because it's the simplest one he's had. It's like, it's a candy that makes a whistle note. You know what I mean? Like, it's the simplest idea, and that's why it's good. Mm-hmm.
Except the worst idea, because it ends up, he finally gets a meeting with the big candy guy, and that's Miss Trilly Scrumptious's dad.
We find it out. No, wait, he goes, and it's like, this is his most industrious idea, because this gentleman, I don't know his base entrepreneurial skill, but he wants to sell things, you know what I mean, like cool inventions, and he takes it to, like, an industry, right? Yeah. Like, that's what he should be doing as an inventor. So he takes this to the factory, he's trying to get in, and he sucks at selling. Like, he sucks at
branding.
He's
not a good salesman. He's
brand salesman.
Inventions.
He sucks at it.
He's not marketing.
He's an idea man.
Yeah.
He's an idea man. And
much like our guy from Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg. He's goddamn genius, but he's not good with people.
No, the Mr. Robot Zuckerberg is not the best. I mean, robots on the spectrum have their own. Don't punish me online for that, saying that, sir. But he goes and is trying to sell it, and the kids actually have, like, a little expositional, like, he's not doing well, is he? Like, no. And he's not. He should have just said, like, hey, check this out. It's a candy. And then he blows the wizard. He doesn't. He's doing too much. He's bearing the lead here. Just fucking blow the thing.
He blows
and it's
it.
Cool.
Well, the Lord Scrumptious only gives him 20 seconds to sell it, and as he's about to get to the whistle, the actual lunch whistle blows.
Blows.
And
it
just completely overblows everything.
Yep. And rather than just proceed to blow it a second time after the sound clears.
He just gets shut down, and he just becomes
seconds.
Beta Boy. And there you go.
And then this is actually throughout the movie, this is his and others, well, mainly his, like, as a superpower. This is his greatest strength, as this is almost a superpower, is that he can burst into song to make his case and just think everyone goes with it. Like, I know this is a musical trope, but as a plot point, it is just like, toot, sweet, the magic. Like, he starts and everyone's like, oh yeah, and they all get it, and it's like,
if he has one skill, it's that he can recruit a flash mob.
He can conduct it better than any. Yeah. This guy could walk his way out of, like, solitary confinement with a song. Like, that. Think about how powerful that he could walk onto the floor of the UN Security Council because he got them all singing. Like, that's pretty fucking impressive. And I would also imagine, like, his other inventions that didn't go, like, he balded a gentleman with a thing, but he probably has killed people that he has sung his way out of. Like, this guy has gotten himself out of trouble before with singing.
So
it is like,
per IMDb, this dance number took 3 weeks to film, involved 38 dancers, 40 fucking singers, 85 musicians, and 100 fucking dogs.
In all honesty, I actually completely genuinely loved that musical number.
Fucking loved that.
And that dance sequence. Like, I mean,
that is amazing.
That one I can't down. I like it. It from a plot perspective, there's nothing deep or poignant about the whole thing, but it was well choreographed. It was well executed. It was impressive from a production standpoint.
Yeah, for a plot point, it was like, no, he just needs to make his case for the whatever. But, like, it turns into a full number, and I'm like, perfect. Like, you found gold in this almost nothing plot point. Yes, absolutely.
Tens of dozens of units have ceased production due to this musical number, and
just on a production level, that it took 3 weeks, it took all this choreography, it took all these resources, it took all these dogs, that doesn't impress you in the least for the technical aptitude that it took to do that.
No.
Oh,
it annoys
me. So dismissive. Oh my gosh.
I don't want to be like this, Kai, but you brought this. You're bringing this to Cushion Kai.
This is my red belt, okay?
Fuck you.
Yeah. In the same way that it's like, wait, you can't recognize how difficult that all was to put together. And they did 1968. Like, they're pioneering some of these music to film techniques at the same time.
Everything about this is the exact example of way too much money, not enough art.
Oh, that is art interrupted
I would,
the plot.
Yeah, I would
art
disagree.
Interrupted
I would say,
the plot.
Way too much. Way too much of one dimension of art and not enough big picture art.
They could have cut an hour out of this movie. Yeah. That, like, if you updated it, there's less. But in the 1960s, look, I go back. I was watching Thunderball the other day. I'm like, largely, this is boring and unnecessary. Like, I get it. You could have told this in a 20-minute fucking specialized CSI plot. I get it. But I give it credence because it's... What is it? Oh, it's a Bond property. I'm supposed to like all of these things, or at least some of them. But this is a one-off where magic happens, and this show is still touring. This is out there and happening. This is a live entertainment. My wife has booked dates for this show in a capacity as a touring manager and a booker. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, sorry. I just, like... It was good times.
I'm glad you like it, dude. I really am. But,
I enjoy it. And inflicting it upon you gives me such exquisite joy. The fact that a factory can't keep dogs out does not mean that it is a bad idea. Because after this incident where dogs ruin the factory and Caractacus is kicked out, it's like, oh, it's terrible. It's like, wait. It doesn't mean it's a bad idea that it can summon dogs. Perhaps that it can be used in other methods.
Lord Scrumptious, the true businessman, he sees a silver lining in anything and figures out a way to make a buck off of it. So eventually this will be a dog treat.
It should have been a dog treat that you put your own lips on. That's something. That there are people that would be down with this. Whatever market that it's for. Because dogs mob the factory, it does not mean it's a bad idea. Those two things drew an audience.
But let's be honest. That was the dogs entered that factory so easily that couldn't have been the first time that's happened.
It's 1908, so the security is not sophisticated.
That was not the first. You see one of them jump in the window. I'm like, okay, you guys are making like a mass produced food product. Like, is there no stand? Like,
it's,
there's no.
No, it's 110 years ago. There's no safety measures. Maybe there's nothing.
Maybe
it's...
the candy whistle summoned the dogs. But, you know, we've all met a raccoon or two in our life, and they're making their way in there at night.
They're going. Yeah. It's pretty easy to get in there. Yeah. There's one guard, and he's like overwhelmed, like, oh. Like, he doesn't have any. Anyway, it's problematic that this factory is so easy to enter, but they ignore that, and they're like, "Get be on your way, sir." So, Caractacus Potts, Crackpots, doesn't have any way to purchase the
car,
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, the husk. So he goes back, and there's a night scene, and he sings "Hush of My Mountain" to his children going to sleep, and it's somber, it's down. And I do, this was one of the songs that I added to Harper, my daughter's bedtime playlist on the old school iPod. I think the second version that we still had that we just loaded songs onto just for the bedtime playlist. This was on there, along with Les Mis's Castle on a Cloud and a few other, you know, like.
I suggested one for that, right?
You can only see the vacant look on my face.
Mahler's Fifth.
Yes! That was on there as well. I have to dig up that playlist. Yeah. And then she did not recognize this movie, heard that song, came in from the other room, and was like, what is that? She remembered this thing from when she was 2.5.
Oh, she had that experience too.
She was in.
As did at several points of this movie, where I was like,
"They just lights
this
you up.
Is
oh,
where
fuck.
That got that dark seed got planted into the recesses of my
my nightmares. Weird Ian Fleming evil was implanted into us. Yeah. It was there. So what happens that night? The circus comes to town, or the carnival, or whatever it is. There's a spectacle.
It's just a carnival.
Mm-hmm. Everything's there. There's the merry-go-round. There's the barkers. There's actually a
wrestling sideshow. I thought that was pretty Empire Wrestling. That's during the dance number.
There's a wrestling episode. I would love
it was cool.
I would love a spinoff of just that in that world where they have to go to Bulgaria to defeat the champions. That would be fantastic. So what does he do? He's like, hey, I can take one of my machines out there.
He's invented the Flobee.
he takes his haircutting machine to the circus, and he is, step right up, here we go, short hair, long hair, what does it matter?
Barks,
we will cut your hair.
Carnies, and then...
Now, again, this is another example, like, we've seen a couple others, like... When he puts the vacuum machine down and it sucks up the whole throw rug, which I still laugh at for its just ridiculousness for slapstick, for the rockets that clearly he hasn't tested his thrust times mass anything, this is another thing that he seemingly has not tested before at all. He has not tested this thing at all.
No.
It just seems like another first attempt.
Well, even things that he has tested, much like his Rube Goldberg machine, they consistently break down or malfunction. Like Grandpa, everyone else gets sausage and eggs, and Grandpa ends up getting a hard-boiled egg. So
a comedy of errors.
I can totally see
this
him testing out the Flobee. It was working great, and then he gets Lord Scufflebutt, and his hair game gets fucked up, yo.
He gets a troll, like,
he is understandably upset.
There's a circle of bald, and then there's other hair. He's mad, and we're like, he's laughing at first while it's going on, and then he's like, stop it. And it's not good, and I would also be mad if I had said this, but however, all of us, you know.
He knew what he was getting into. Mm-hmm. I mean, even just from, like, a technical analysis, this machine working... in the best case scenario, according to its design, just from the outside, bowl that descended over his head only covered half of his hair.
Yeah.
Like it was just physically configured to that most of his hair was inaccessible.
And then also too, like if you explain this to a wife or a parole officer or anybody where it's like, yeah, I'm going to go get my haircut. Like where? At the carnival? It's just not a great idea. Yeah. And it works out exactly how you would imagine
that's on him and his woman. She talks him into it the whole time. He's like, no, you should totally get your haircut right now, right here at the carnival. And he's like,
which I kind of get because they're all 1908. Like we're some... In the U.S., some world fairs are happening very soon. Like, was it 1912? Where it's
wait a second. We still think that this movie was in 1908. That's just when the car was running its grand prix.
Oh, you're right. Would this be past World War
One? You think we're in
would
the
this
future?
Be past?
Well, I mean, the car had enough time to decompose into its state.
So at least like 5-8 years just in the elements, right?
I'm guessing this is more like 1920.
Is this the original Bumblebee?
I mean, I guess,
so we're
I guess
past,
you'd say
are we
from,
past
from
World
how
War
it's
I?
Set up that there, it's pre-World War One, right?
Yeah.
So I guess it's, I'm guessing 1915.
Choose the man don't choose the car.
Yeah, fair enough. We are right in the teeth of like some world's fairs where the hot dog is popularized and invented and popsicles and other things. Like, we're at the fore of like... New, exciting, like, animatronics are becoming like, oh, wow, this is happening. We're discovering this. And so I could understand the wife's push for like, yeah, try it. It's new and different. Like, there's that. But, again, you're in it for the spectacle. And they get exactly what they deserve for literally a guy named Crackpot is cutting her hair with a machine that he has never tested before on humans.
By the way, this is still the prologue. We have not reached the movie yet.
We haven't
yet.
Gotten to the movie. The movie has not really begun yet. We're just this preamble here.
So he gets into a song and dance number. You two guys or maybe you love
it. Kyle. I get, no. This is my favorite number.
This is your favorite number.
Old Bamboo is the best. He escapes. He escapes because he's running away. He has to camouflage himself as an entertainer.
The lead dancer of a troupe he has never been a part of. Never. And kills his performance.
Lots of choreography.
In order to evade an ass whooping. And then he gets to go home.
Anyway, he escapes and they're performing. And the performance is so good that he tips his hat over. And the crowd is throwing bobs, crowns, coins, golds, shillings, and he is collecting them into his hat. All of the currency!
I would say at this point, it's worth noting that this man obviously has a clear career path. If he would, one that he obviously would enjoy.
He
should be an entertainer, right? Not an inventor.
He took an entire candy factory.
He made all the money to buy this car in one night.
One night. And then just the day before, an entire candy factory that could not sing or dance, he got them choreographed with the sound of his goddamn voice. Like, his path is clear. That's his superpower. He can inspire other. He should be like an art director for one of the big dance houses. Like, he is magic, but he ignores that. What does he do with the money that he collected in the hat? He goes and buys the rusted out husk of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. That's where he goes. He buys it, and there's a scene where Chitty Chitty's being midwifed into the next world. Like, the kids are worried. They're sitting outside.
Days
and
weeks
close. Wrapped, waiting. Like, or one of those scenes where they're like, oh, no, is the delivery going to go well? And it's like in the 1800s. And it's like, oh, no, we don't know what eclampsia is. And, oh, my gosh.
When we're greeted to the child care offered by, obviously senile.
Offered by grandpa.
Obviously senile elder who needs more care.
Yes.
Grandpa, by the way, Lionel Jeffries, 6 months younger than Dick Van Dyke.
This is also hilarious. I didn't know that, actually. Oh, my God. Grandpa, he's there. He's doing that. He's not reliable in terms of child care or consistency or reality, but he's
all
there.
He's all those kids.
And Caractacus is having like a manic episode where he just needs to focus on the car, and he's just in the garage.
He is removing comforts of their home, such as their stove, so that he can fix this car. He is making so much noise to the point where he is not making noise. The kids wake up due to silence and then are only lulled back to sleep due to him continuing his work.
So their world is gripped by his inattentiveness. Like, they are at the mercy of him caring at all, or others from the outside world saying, like, yeah, your children should be X, Y. He's like, oh, I don't know, whatever. But we return to, I mean, ostensibly, he's probably drinking really heavily focused on himself, narcissism or something. Something is driving his inattentiveness. But for this, he is focusing on this and his talents. Like, it's a him thing, right? Like, I want to do this car for my kids, but I'm going to ignore my kids because I can do this car really well. And so
he's happy to not be around these kids, and I don't blame him because he's fucking kids.
He takes every opportunity. He is a great absentee father. And like, when he's there, it's like, oh, dad was great. He's present. Like, oh, he's having fun.
This is what love feels like.
Exactly. They have glimpses of
these are the most overstimulated children I have ever seen. And this is, again, I'm roughshotting still 1908. You guys have your own theories, but there's no reason for these kids to be so animated, so excited, so worked up over a goddamn husk of a car.
They don't have the Hulus. There's no Netflix. Yeah, they don't have these. They don't have an iPad or a screen or any pay-to-play games. There's none of these things.
I think that situation already constitutes child abuse.
They don't even have a chessboard.
So what does he do? The car It comes out. I mean, has polished and galvanized these. Like, the car looks amazing. After, like, it's completely rusted out. He's restored it. He has restored it with.
He is very deep in debt. Let's just say that. I mean, he has.
How does he have all of these elements? Is he mortgaging like his home property, or maybe he has like indentured servants on the what have you in the Northland?
Probably
like,
selling drugs.
It doesn't make any sense. But this car is gorgeous. After they wheel it out, like, it is to the nines. And so, what do they want to do? Naturally, like anybody,
go on a picnic.
Like it's perpetual summer in the northern part of England where they are. So of course they're going to go on a picnic.
I just want to point out here we're presented with his second. Very obvious, very easy career option, which is restoration of old vehicles, which he's obviously amazing at.
He could immediately have sold that car.
He's great at it.
Way more than he purchased it for.
But there's like 14 cars in their city.
In real time, that was what? Maybe like a day and a half, 3 days or something? Yeah. Like
weeks. Weeks. Because that man doesn't have the supplies for that.
Again, we don't know that. We're unclear of what he is leveraging and doing. But let's say it's a week and a half at most. Either way, like, if you could get a client to say, like, you see this car? It burst into fire. It remembers cooking its owner inside of it when it crashed the Grand Prix. But I can get it turned around for you in writing. Like, they're like, yeah, of course, of course. Like, he could have just worked for the Baron. The Baron would have been like, yeah, of course. He could have just made, again, horrible war weapons for the Baron, which was the course of history. Everybody, Operation Paperclip, like the biggest and the baddest, they want the people. That's what it is.
By the way, we are 55 minutes into the movie, and we are only now in the movie. He fixes it.
It looks like
35 shillings.
We're not yet. There's a turn coming here. You're right. You are correct where we're not into the movie, but there is a specific, like, narrative turn where we go into what Chitty Chitty Bang Bang is. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with them going to the beach for the picnic. And again, apparently the only person out driving around in this part of the country, because the oligarchy has taken control.
It's truly scrumptious.
And V has not locked down on the ruling class yet. It is truly is crashed into a ditch. She's the only one driving around northern England. She's crashed into a mini swamp. Caractacus carries her out and says, like, what are you going to do? And the kids are like, oh, no, come over. We're going to a picnic. Yay, yeah. Picnic.
They abandon her like, car and they go on the picnic.
Of course, like, because as we have seen, there's no one else on the road. No one exists up there. So her people will take care of it. Like,
and he's only about ankle deep in those waters. Like, that car could easily back up, no problem. I don't even think the chassis is touching the water.
No, I think the car was broken. Like, it overheated or something. But as an oligarch, she can just leave her car there, and then it will be collected by her father's people later when they bring it back before they kill some peasants for disobeying. And
someone definitely
it will be fine. Like, yeah, somebody comes in. Yeah, she doesn't care. Like, her world is not filled with care. Like, it is like, oh no, this is fine. Of course I'll go to the beach with you. And so they go to the beach for a picnic, and there's a fun, like, literally like a 60s beach. We're changing. We have goofy outfits. There's things and a pic. Like, they do the full beach treatment. And this is the time when it happens. Just before the turn is, the kids are spying on their dad and Mrs. Truly Scrumptious, and they say, oh no, what's going on? Have they kissed yet? No, they haven't kissed. Well, yeah, if they kiss, they'll have to get married. And I'm like, this is the trauma and innocence understanding of children of this time, where it's like, yes, that will not happen in the same. I'm so sorry, kids. Like, they're carrying trauma with them to be like, when is mommy coming next? Will you find something? Like, like an open wound. Like, you cannot not look at it. But this is where we kick into our next act, which is literally where the movie starts, which is Caractacus Potts, Dick Van Dyke, starts narrating. And this is what changes the movie. This is like a Jacob's Ladder moment. Like, you could see it as he was swimming in the break. He was started to drown. And the rest of the movie is a fantasy where he starts to say, like, no, the boat out there you see, children, you see that boat? That's the Baron. He's after me. He is after me because of this highly equipped vehicle that I have created. And you know what else? Look around you. The surf has moved in and you have not seen it. And it's like, this is the turn here. This is the turn where it's like, oh, we're in a different movie now. Like, they announce, like, okay, that was Child's Play, but now we're in literally what his imagination is for. Okay, if I can just sum it up basically, like, this is like a paranoid persecution complex that somebody has during, like, a schizophrenic episode where it's like, they're out to get me. The government and the thing. And the people didn't see the pizza. Like, the Baron, the international Baron, wants to get me for creating this car in my garage. I am so poor. I don't have a wife. I am dependent on... That's the moment where this is going on. Like, they shift it into these things.
I mean, if you go
forward
and look at the world he creates and all of its detail, I mean, this just reeks mm-hmm. of childhood trauma just manifesting itself in the various details. I mean, the town where children are outlawed. I mean, he was not wanted as a child. Very clearly.
No, he was not. He's recreating this his own trauma. He's trying to control it with these things.
This is a coping mechanism that he's now passing on to his own
children. He's completely creating this in its own sense. But, of course, we get the comical Baron that is... He has these slapstick-esque, like Rocky and Bullwinkle kind of...
Baron Bombers.
Henchmen. They go... Baron Bombers. The Baron. He is, excuse me, we see the Baron immediately, who, again, the Kaiser is just the best stand-in for this, Wilhelm. But the Kaiser sends his folks to go acquire Chitty Chitty in England. Well, hey, everybody. You know what? We're going to celebrate our show's first birthday party.
Happy birthday to us.
Isn't that fucking cool?
That is super cool.
You know how we're going to do it? We are going to benefit St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital.
I would have said Pajama Jamma Jam, but this is just as good.
That's also awesome. But, I mean, it is giving season, people, especially for us. And this organization provides free medical care to children around the world. And housing to their families, and they just help and enrich people. I mean, just save kids. So this is one of those core organizations that I believe in so much.
Sounds like we should do something to help them, Kai. What do you think?
I mean, I'm a dad, and it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with that, mm-hmm. but it's just that much more poignant that it's like, no, they are there to help folks and try and lift them up. Angels, I say, that work there.
We just had a medical incident in the family as well. Oh. And thankfully, our family was able to take care of themselves, but there aren't enough folks out there who can do that. So I think we should help St. Jude's raise some money, Kai.
But I think so.
You think $2,000 is a good number?
I wish it could be more, but I think that's a reasonable target for us to try and reach for, and then hopefully we can come back and do more, but I think we could try and commit to $2,000. Hey, listeners, are you listening?
Yeah.
Come on.
Boston we're gonna Network save community, some, come on out.
We're going to save some babies here. This is important. Saving kids' lives. It is definitely good stuff. Everybody, go to CushionKai.com, or if you prefer fundraising, .stjude.org/CushionKai. We're taking donations, and we'd appreciate it. All right. Thanks much. Rock on, Kush.
Rock on, Kai.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to part two of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. When we left you off, the movie had changed tones a bit. And we depart from the original book material to something created by
Let's give him 2 minutes back. We meet some children. We meet a woman. We meet Dick Van Dyke. He's an inventor. She's a school mm-hmm. teacher. He buys Practicus a car, and then he's taking his kids on a picnic
to the beach, where they hook back up with Miss Truly Scrumptious. Mm-hmm. And so I always grew up thinking that this, even though he was telling a story, they merge it into it's happening because they mm-hmm. start reacting to things. Because later in the movie, spoiler everybody, they come back as if none of that happened and it was just the end of the story. However, there are material things that happen, like their relationship grows. Remember she sings that song about like falling in love with him and mm-hmm. stuff? So it's kind of a cheat. And then also the car does, again, take off like a Harrier jet and fly. So I'm still... you could convince me that it was just
the
a story.
The car flies for a while, too. Like, they're up there, yeah. like...
Oh, that thing goes. But what the story that they do unleash is Vulgarian spies upon the English countryside. And they just... They were like, all right, let's do every tropey, slapsticky thing we can with these bumbling spies who are pretending to be English gentlemen. There's a bunch of real simple jokes that come across. Very fun to watch. They're very goofy. But they've been tasked with kidnapping Mr. Caractacus Potts and taking him back to Bulgaria so that he can invent things for Dear Baron. What was the Baron's name? Bombast? Baron Bombast something?
Baron Bombburst.
Bombburst. Mm-hmm. Bombburst. Mm-hmm. Okay, so after their shenanigans and hijinks across the English countryside, they do stumble somehow. They're not... Competence isn't one of their, like, strong like things they execute on, but they do randomly come across the Potts estate, and it's like, oh, it says inventors! This must be the guy! And so they come in and they say, oh, is it you, Mr. Potts? But they have misidentified Grandpa Potts as Caractacus. And so Grandpa is full like foreign service military for the British. He's got the pith helmet on. And he's
only slightly more confused than he was before they came in.
Just a little bit. But he goes along with it. He's like, oh, off to Africa. Here we go. And he pops into the thing. And he does, yeah, he pops in and out of this thing, like he's going to different places. What do you think he's doing in there? Like, what, is he napping? Because
at one point he is napping, because he does wake up, he does the I just woke up stretch, and he looks out his window, he's like, oh.
So like a vampire, he sleeps standing up. I posit that he is masturbating to themed pornography from these places, and that's what the shed is for. Mm.
Old-timey 19th century pornography.
Yeah.
Taking a trip to India today.
Yeah. Ooh, I'll be in the beaten off shed. Yeah, Mr. Potts is like, look, Dad, I don't want to judge, but the kids have walked in on you like four or five times. Can we get you a tool shed? And there it is. So,
lock from the outside, please.
Mm. Yes, yes. And so what happens then? This is one of the most impressive things to me, because how bumbling the Vulgarians are, if they've proven out to be. As a race, as a race of people, they appear to be bumbling.
No, that's not. No.
You can't say, oh, hashtag all Vulgarians.
What do you mean, you people?
define yourself. So what do? They call in the Vulgarian Air Force, which is Zeppelin, and they drop a tow cable onto the top of this tool shed, and whoop, up Grandpa goes into the skies.
The beat-off shed is now aerial. Thank you.
Aerial. It's an aerial beat-off shed. So this is... they're flying along, and they get picked up by Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, which they're trying to intercept here. And Caractacus has Miss Scrumptious in the car with the kids, and they're driving in hot pursuit, and he drives over a cliff.
And they are falling and falling and falling, and then the slowest wingspan expands.
Wait. They are falling and falling and falling, and then intermission.
Intermission.
It's actually a very good cliffhanger.
It is a good cliffhanger. Literally, like, by the book cliffhanger. And then they actually replay that scene for us, and we see the wings gradually spread, and the way Dick Van Dyke responds, or like how he reacts to it, is like, or truly goes, oh my gosh, the plane is flying. He goes, Yeah. As if he was not aware of this feature.
And as a callback to a previous speculation, that was probably an obvious suicide attempt, group suicide attempt.
I think he wanted to, he's ideating self-harm, and he's like, my life is so tragic. I need to take out the ones closest to me to prevent their suffering as well. These are steps. You know what I mean? Like, parent that loses snaps and shoots like the three kids and the wife, then himself. Like, this happens. However, it turns out great. The car can not only fly, it can fly like long distances very evenly too. It doesn't seem to be a lot of chop.
They go from day to night to back to day on their travels. Like,
this
the kids
is
are
a
taking a nap.
Flight. Yeah.
Grandpa on his journey sings a whole song about how posh his traveling accommodations are.
But then as he's singing this, we see the Zeppelin start to lose altitude. As he's singing the song, and the Bulgarians are throwing, like, there's like a safe, there's like an iron stove, there's like a picnic basket.
They throw a fat guy off.
and so what is going down, and the shed actually dips into the water. What should have happened is it just acts as an anchor and whips the Zeppelin into the ground, or into the drink, which would be like one of the greatest military disasters in history, because the Baron was on that thing,
the
right?
Flagship,
You lost the leader, it's done! Like, that would have been a good plot point, too. Like, just the tragedy. Grandpa's gone. They just see the floating Zeppelin pieces. But they recover, they gain altitude again. And, it's a miracle as a bumbling race of people, or at least the folks at the top, the ruling class. It's amazing that they're able to, like, operate and navigate a Zeppelin. Mm. Like, I'm impressed by this.
Yes.
There are many other things in the orbit of that world that don't work out great. And then another disturbing piece, like, because if you're truly, like, truly scrambled, when you looked over and he goes, like, of course it's flying. And then you just cut to them at night. They're still flying. And she goes, like, well, do you know where we're going? And he's like, no, but pretty sure Chitty does. That is alarming. That's not the answer you're looking for. It's like, shouldn't you know that?
The answer at minimum should be we're following the Zeppelin. However,
that would be good.
Yeah. I would just, if your commercial airline pilot had a similar answer. this old baby knows where she's going.
Oh, it knows where Vegas is or Charlotte, wherever we're going.
When she's ready, she'll let me know.
It's like a relationship you have with like a horse. You know, it's like, how do you go? There's no moon out tonight. Like, oh, Spreckles knows these paths. Back of her hooves.
Well, anyway, Crackpot's not a very good storyteller, that's all.
No. They arrive in Bulgaria, and a little, like, Susian, like, megaphone comes down, and it's like, thank you for flying Bulgarian Airlines, buckle up, and there's no smoking. They're very polite, you know. Bulgaria is gorgeous. I bet Bulgaria is right next to...
It's like Austria. It's the Austrian Alps.
Well, you know what I bet it's next to is the country that Dr. Doom is the dictator of, Latveria. Mm. I bet they're neighbors. Latvia. They have Latveria.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet the Bulgarians annoy the shit out of Dr. Doom. Like at the tri-country tribal meeting things. He's like, oh, God, these fucking guys again.
doctor.
One of them's trapped in the closet. He's like, don't talk to him. Oh, God. Yeah. They're falling down the stairs.
We must discuss water rights.
His gun went off in the elevator. Like, just who does that?
Your mask is very shiny, doctor. You get
may
new
I
polish.
Touch it? Oh, your chuchi mask. Oh.
Your cape is much greener than usual. this is wonderful. Is this velvet?
Stop touching me! So the king, the baron, lays out that he saw Chitty Chitty float. So he's like, correct, Mr. Potts, you must make my car float. And Mr. Potts, thinking on his feet, is like, okay. He doesn't even start with, like, you've got the wrong guy. He's like... All right.
he's a military strategist. He understands the seriousness of this, and so he is just playing along.
Roll with it. Roll with it. Yeah. You've been kidnapped. These people are not sane. Just go with it.
Well, I've masturbated to worse things.
I still have some trapped in the shed. Okay, we can do this.
This is the one kids movie with the most masturbation references in it.
Absolutely. And they take them to they take Grandpa to the dungeon where there are other not inventors but like they've kidnapped the telephone repair guy and whoever can fix anything or do something has been trapped in here. And we also get a really good joke.
Scientists
something. They keep saying like, "Oh, they put you on the rack and stretch you." And one of the tallest one goes, "When I first came here, I was a midget."
Yes.
Like we got a good midget joke. We got a good midget joke in there. And they sang another one of my favorite songs is "Grow the Roses" of success from failure. You must fail. All of you must fail. Hmm. And so they sing this song. And the old men are prancing around, and they all climb up on the car, and then it just belches smoke and collapses. Mm-hmm. It's a great ending to a scene. Oh, soon we cut back. Top of the castle. Chitty spots the castle, comes, buzzes the tower, goes in for a low pass, and they get out the 8-inch cannons. Those don't make great aren't great anti-aircraft
in the annals of military of military technology. The use of cannon for surface
field,
to air
field artillery
was quickly found to be
low
double-edged sword for everybody on the ground.
So they go to their strength, which is the cavalry. That's what they've got. So they run out there, and also too from the ground, creepy. The Baron says, "Oh, kids! They have kids." Which that's never
turns out that kids are outlawed in Bulgaria.
It
is illegal to be a child in Bulgaria.
One of its, redeeming qualities, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah.
This is an area of policy that the Bulgarians managed to get right.
Mm-hmm. They followed through on this one. There's no kids anywhere. They're terrified. And actually, the scene where the people, they show up in the town, and the townspeople are like, "Oh, who are you?" And then a horn sounds, and everyone books it. They flee. They're like, it's like high noon, get the hell out of Dodge. Everyone runs for cover. And it's actually, this scene is chilling because however bumbling the Bulgarians are, they are in charge and they will take your children or do whatever to you by force. So as a reminder, as we get closer into this, the Baroness has outlawed them. And that's when we meet the toy maker. Oh, the sweet toy maker.
Played by Benny Hill.
Benny, is that Benny Hill?
That's Benny Hill, who would also come in per DVD's request to do rewrites as they went along.
And he was also in the beginning.
Who was he in the beginning?
He was the guy who was selling the chitty, chitty at the beginning, yeah.
Dig it.
With a vague Scottish accent.
Mm. And I have to say, the toy maker, producer Hakey, if you put on some suspenders and like a gray wig, that's you for Halloween. Like,
well, that's exactly what I'm wearing right now.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I'm sorry. I was looking at the video feed. It looks good.
It's actually not why I'm wearing this. I just...
it's a different Lederhosen-related event you were going to attend. But yeah, you look related to the toy maker, I have to say. But it is the lovely Benny Hill under there. So that's when we meet my probably favorite TV character, or my movie character of all time of anything. The child catcher.
Okay.
The child catcher is, he's as qualified to do this job as much as Santa is qualified to do his. It's like seeing professionals execute on a high level is magic. Because this guy is built for this job.
So I have to am I the only one who thought that in the remake of this, Christoph Waltz would kill?
There are many times where I reflected on Christoph Waltz and in Glorious Bastards playing this role here. Also, by the way, named by Empire Magazine as one of the scariest characters to be brought into a movie screen.
All he has is a hook and a net and a desire to smell children.
That's all
and
he
it's,
needs.
We only lean a little bit into the anti-Semitic thing with the nose, but like he's like he's like Batman almost, because his obsession has become his identity. He doesn't have a name. There's no name. He's just the child catcher now. He is the knight for children.
Mm, the Nightman.
So they we cut back and forth a lot, but they are concealed in the basement by the friendly toy maker. He hides them. They have to pretend they're toys. But the child catcher like hatches a plan for later. By this time, the cavalry has brought back Chitty. And so the Baron is sitting in it trying to make it fly, but all he does is repeatedly honk the horn and yell, "Fly, fly, make it fly." So they drag Elder Potts, Grandpa, down to try and make it fly, and he hits a button, but Chitty launches the Baroness, who is sitting in the back, like 300 feet in the air.
The ejector seat tosses her into a lake.
Well, no, she was floating harmlessly down until the Baron takes like a blunderbuss and tries to shoot. I don't know what he was trying to accomplish.
He's trying to murder her.
He's trying to murder her? Is that...
Well, I mean, there is another scene. I can't remember if it comes before or after this. I think after this. Yes, yeah.
Trapdoor.
I mean, he is very clearly has a homicidal streak.
He ends up only, like, puncturing her bloomers, which makes her fall eventually into the lake. But as she right falls, he's like, damn it, I'll get you next time. Don't worry.
Yeah. So, yeah, if Trump stages a coup, like, we're Bulgaria in just a few years here. But back to the child catcher. He goes back to his child predator playbook. And what does he do? He disguises himself as a free candy vendor.
Yeah.
That's how you do it, everybody. He's the best.
This is when I'm at my angriest at this movie here. I am frothing at the mouth. I'm the cop in Reservoir Dog, and you, Kai, are Michael Madsen. You have just cut off my ear, and you are dousing me in gasoline.
I'm dancing around
while fucking Tim Roth is just like, "Still, you lost an ear. Shut up. Fuck you,
child catcher."
Because these dumb kids who know the seriousness of the situation they're in, they fall for the free candy and free ice cream.
And then, it's so good how, like, the trappings fall away and they're just in a cage just to, like, bring it home. Oh, and the cackle that the child catcher lets go.
He's the happiest he has ever been.
Nobody just doing their job laughs like that. You know what I mean? Except maybe the Joker. But
he takes pride in his work.
You gotta love what
you do. The child catcher is way better at his job than the Joker. So that's when the toy maker takes us to the child caves, where the prison who have been concealed but not taken are living. It's a very nice, like, atmospheric kind of, you know, under subterranean river cave kind of a thing. And they're being fed bread through, like, a grate in the wall. And even he goes, like, "Oh, look at them, like rats. Look at them go." but this Roald Dahl's angle here is, like, We're in a parable for fascism, or it is. You know what I mean? It's like it's totalitarian control, and there's
strong parallels to other Roald Dahl stories.
And this again is Roald Dahl's independent from the Ian Fleming novel at this point. This entire hour and a half was never in the original text.
Indeed. But just as long as we're talking about children in cages, I'd like to remind everybody: please make sure you're registered to vote for the upcoming election. Your tax dollars are putting children in cages right now because they're largely the wrong skin color. So vote.org or Vote Save America. Yeah. Anyway, then we get to another. I could only imagine when you were listening to this song, your rage growing even more about just this ridiculous movie is the Choochie Face song. And even the fun bustier she was wearing, the naughty thing with the long hair. But it's just that. The delight of being silly. They've just completely embraced for this. And I'm like, yeah. And he does try and... He drops the Baroness into a trap door.
No. I mean, he has a few failed attempts at murder prior to that in this
scene. Did we bring up why? He's just like... She's spoiling his fun? That was
it? He's just an evil dude.
He's just bad. He's just bad all the way around. Anyway. After she survives that, again... he's incredibly incompetent, but
she is super standby your man on this one. Like she knows her life has been in jeopardy multiple times at the hands of this man, and she still stands next to him.
I mean, love the one you're with, right?
I guess so.
that embodies Oh, that this embodies that relationship there.
Baroness Bomburst well needs an 800 number and a couch to sleep on. Like, this is bad.
Maybe so a hug. Onward, this was all in preparation for the Baron's birthday party. And Potts and Truly are disguised as mechanical dolls to perform and distract them because they have hatched a plan.
The Baron, who has made being a child illegal, wants toys for his birthday.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah, this much like Star Wars fans today.
Yes, absolutely. Get me those toys. The dance that Dick Van Dyke does is surreal with the use of a balance wire. Just kind of playing with those angles is fun.
He is a marionette off of a wire, but on a wire.
On a wire, off a wire. And everyone's having a great time. And when the Baron is dancing with Potts, everyone is distracted. And then the children launch their plan. They shackle the bourgeoisie and the landed wealthy. And they're throwing nets over them. And they're up overthrowing tyranny. Oh, the military is alerted. But the large force that tries to enter the castle are foiled by a single like oil slick bucket that they all every single one trips over. So that buys them more time for the rebellion.
Tale as old as time. That's why we use it today in our current military warfare. Like,
just there should have been. Yeah, just slick it up, guys. That'll it'll slow them down. Truly finds the kids and Potts and the toy maker ram the door down. There's just another spare cannon lying around. And there are many like fantastical things that go on in this movie, but one of the more just confusing ones is that there's a line of soldiers like with rifles. And the kids manage to do like an unarmed charge and just knock them over. So is everyone just terrified of kids, or is it just that the military is that at it? Like, they don't drill anymore.
I thought it was just me.
What?
Terrified of kids. I mean,
oh, they're terrified of kids. Well, yeah. Have you gone to like ancestry.com? Like, are you part Bulgarian? Maybe.
All I'm saying is this movie is very offensive.
So yeah, I think the military's just gotten lazy and they're not drilled. Years of inactivity. Yeah, they don't want to mess with Latveria. Dr. Doom has let them know he's not down with that. He'll leave them alone just because then he'd have to run their shitty country. So he's like, fuck this. Finally, they're pushing people off the castle walls too. Mm-hmm. Did you notice that? Like, folks are going down.
Children are murdering full grown adults here. It is like children of the corn.
It's not just nets. Like,
and there is a ton of implied death.
And Caractacus like cracks a dude over the head with a mace too. Mm-hmm. Like, he probably, you know, I think that guy probably died.
He should be dead if he isn't. The lucky ones died in this melee.
The Baron and the Baroness try and escape down a chute, but it leads right into the child catcher's cage where they're wrapped up. And I would assume hung from the walls, or maybe dragged through the streets of that little town and spit upon, much like Mussolini. But
Or Queen Cersei.
The child catcher is also very fitting. He's surrounded by kids. And, like, even that, he still has, like, a smirk on his face. Like, yeah. And they surround him and toss a net over him and wrap him up, too. Yeah, I wonder what they did with that guy. Anyway.
Lots of terrible things.
So they flip it over. Tyranny is being overthrown. And that's, of course, when Chitty shows just...
Put it in neutral and rolled it down the stairs, but it's supposed to give the impression that it's alive still.
Yeah, no, it's a full character at this point. Like, it's making decisions, it's saving people, it's pushing the story forward. They all climb on board, and again, much like a Harrier jet, the wings come out, but it has a vertical lift. Mm-hmm. This ancient car that probably weighs like as much as a commuter train with all the the tech inside of it, and then whoosh, like just off into the sky
with its blood-soaked treads. Just
help, yeah. Look, gotta break a few eggs. Revolution. There's a cost, everybody. This was not a bloodless coup.
No.
And so then we cut right back to after the picnic, like he's just telling a story.
We've been sitting on this beach for an hour and a half.
Right. And let's see. It's pretty pro forma from here. Lord Scrumptious
The kids try to suggest that the mom, the dad and Miss Scrumptious in the story get married. And Dick Van Dyke's like, I barely know this woman. And Truly Scrumptious is truly bummed out by this reaction. She was like, it was on my to-do list, get engaged by the end of the day. And
by the end of the day, they've met like a couple days before, maybe. Mm. And then also, if that all was imaginary, we lose... Because there's a thing after he's telling the story where it develops her character, like, falling in love with him. That gets invalidated if that was all a story. Mm-hmm. That doesn't get to be real. So in the span of 2 days, she's like, oh, we're not getting engaged. Like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
Anyway, her dad is like, you know what? The whistling treats thing, let's make it for dogs. He's like, he's an entrepreneur. It's still neat. Which is, a dumb, I don't, dogs don't have, like, the lip powered. Like, I don't know how that would work necessarily.
The owner uses it as a whistle, and then the dog eats the treat.
Oh, there you go. So you put your mouth on a dog treat, and then you give it to the dog.
Well, it was supposed to be a peppermint candy to begin with, so that's...
There you go.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if dogs could spit? That would be disgusting. If you just... That would be so gross. Like, Rover, come on, outside.
And just did it out of spite, too.
Yeah, because like, they do. They huff and they look at you.
Damn, he has an
attitude. I
want to
go outside. Stop. Why can't they? Maybe they could. I could teach my dog to spit.
Dog becomes such an asshole.
Keeps spitting in the hamper. So... He gets the contract. He realizes he's going to make money. He runs to Truly. They kiss. And
and because he kissed her, she is now implied, you are marrying me. And he's like,
exactly.
Well, if I have to.
And the kids laid that out.
That's
actually
always the best response to
it. They're obeying their own rule because the kids floated that earlier. It's like, if they kiss, they have to get married. Mm-hmm. And so it's like,
that's
how
that works 110 years ago.
That's in this pocket universe of Bulgaria. They're so happy that they're unaware Chitty has once again taken to the skies. Oh, boy.
Roll
it's like
credits.
A unicorn, really. You know what I mean? Or a Pegasus or something.
This movie was a nightmare to get made here. This was purely done out of spite as an answer to... Mary Poppins 4 years prior.
Oh, yeah.
This role was offered to Dick Van Dyke multiple times, who refused to take the job time after time until they offered him a 7-figure deal plus percentage points.
And one of the things he did not want to do was an English accent.
Yes. He specifically, that was a huge thing. He got mad criticism for that in Mary Poppins. Julie As Andrews should, was also terrible. Offered a role in this of Truly Scrumptious and declined.
Oh,
what else here we got? 2 hours, 20 minutes. This is the longest children's movie before the Harry Potter series.
Holy cow. This does not need to be 2 hours, 20 minutes.
Yeah. Lord Scrumptious would shortly have a stroke after this movie and would end his career.
Oh.
While Dick Van Dyke was smoking 2 packs of cigarettes a day and found the dance numbers very demanding, as smoking 2 packs a day will do.
That is another great detail.
According to Heather Ripley, who was the little girl, Dick Van Dyke is an alcoholic on this set.
Gotcha.
Dick Van Dyke, of course, who is now making mad money off this movie, regardless of what happens, says this movie will out Disney. And while it was not a success, was not a failure financially, it did lose money and was critically panned.
Yeah.
And that's 51-year-old Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, or as known in Germany, Shitty Shitty Bang
Shitty
Bang.
Bang Bang. All righty, Kush. Would you recommend this movie to anybody?
Only if you hate someone really badly.
Show it to your kids. Show it to your family. This is a gem. I don't
Nothing
know where AFI has
up.
It on that 100 list, but I bet you it's beating a lot of stuff that we love. Yeah, hey, producer Hakey, where are you with this movie?
Okay, in all honesty, I do really enjoy some of the musical numbers. A few of them. Some of them are ridiculous, but a few of them I really enjoy. I kind of like the whole Roald Dahl section. I mean, that's an actual, like, fairy tale executed poorly, but it's still, a dark kind of fairy tale. It has no place with the rest of the movie. I mean, the whole rest of it, the whole big prologue and the car and everything is just...
It's way too long. Well, makes
and it has no, you know, it doesn't aggregate to anything but larger than its individual elements, right? It's just a bunch of aggregate pieces of various different movies and everything trying to recreate.
Yeah.
It's like a color by numbers...
I mean, this movie is about nothing, but you take out Vulgaria, it's an hour and a half shorter, and you remove the music, and it's 15 minutes long. Like,
Disagree. Don't take out Vulgaria. Here's what you do. You can get this to 90. You can. Mm-hmm. It requires taking out a few musical numbers. We have to scrub the part where it's a story. We just integrate that it's...
Just a musical review.
Yeah,
just a music... Wait, you trim a bunch of the front stuff out. A lot of the you could almost take most of the bumbling trying to find and capture
The Rube Goldberg machine.
Well, the vaudeville section. Right?
Oh, the Flowbee.
Out the Flowbee. So, there's a bunch of this stuff we could trim out. And I think you can get it. You can get like a 90-minute cut of this thing.
I would probably have a different opinion of this if it was 90 minutes.
Indeed. And yeah, I for whatever reason, this made it into that stack of VHSs that I saw over and over and over again. I remember dancing with it to numbers with my sister in front of the TV in Days of Yore. So it has a special place in my heart for that. But
I mean, it kind of overlaps with so many other movies at the time. It really feels like they just try to steal elements. I remember thinking, because I hadn't seen it in 20 years, when I saw The Child Catcher and everything, it brought up all these like deep,
all these memories.
And I found myself wondering about the movie Babes in Toyland. Placed all those sort of associations with that movie, and I didn't.
Babes in Toyland. Because
that's
movie.
Also about like children being kidnapped and taken away. I think.
Oh, wow.
That's just, again.
No. I'm into child capturing related media, I found out.
And I feel a note about.
You are among friends.
Chitty.
There are many of us outside.
I feel like C2B2 is the note of him being alive. That comes from Herbie Goes Bananas, which only came out 9 months prior.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. Here's the modality that I would recommend this in, because there's entertaining movies, there's exciting movies, then there are important movies. And guys, I have to say, this is a property that was touched by Ian Fleming, Roald Dahl, Dick Van Dyke. Yep. I mean, Benny Hill. Just it has an important piece.
The notes on paper are very interesting. Very interesting. The final product is awful.
I got to go back and look for more of these gems. But I think you should see it just because it touches all of these like film and narrative storytelling royalty that we have. And it's like, this exists out there. Be it good or not. To me, I'm like, with just the Child Catcher and the songs, I'm like, put yourself through it. You should, everyone should see this at least once. It's on the list. All right. Well, if you dare, visit us at cushionkai.com. Follow us on the web. Find out the tweetery do on things. Kush, how's the any bar related projects happening?
Nope, not yet.
Not yet.
We're
still on the hopper.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you again for joining us. This has been Kush and Kai. Rock on, Kush.
Rock on, Kai.